We're doing Tehillim. We're up to the 64th chapter. Lam Natzeach Mizmor Le David. The conductor is given a song of praise, a song that was composed by King David. And this song has multiple levels of interpretation. One interpretation, the simple interpretation, is that David is talking about himself. He had many enemies. The prime enemy was King Saul, his father-in-law, who sought to kill him. And he spent much time in hiding and running away from his father-in-law, who almost killed him. Almost every other enemy, David didn't have too much of a challenge with. He had his wars, but at the end of the day, his prime enemy, really, that he speaks about at length in Psalms, is his own father-in-law, King Saul, who tried to kill him. Avshalom was a period. It was a relatively short period. So we have Psalms about Avshalom, too. We have Psalms about other people. But the prime enemy was really King Saul. So one interpretation is that this is talking about King Saul. Another interpretation is that King David saw in prophetic vision that his great-great-great-grandson, Daniel, would be thrown into a lion's den in the days of Darius. We know that Daniel was a trusted advisor of Darius, and the other advisors were jealous of the good advice and the preferential treatment that Daniel got, and they were able to convince Darius to write a decree that people can only pray to Darius, that if anyone is caught for the next month asking a request of any being other than Darius, they should be thrown into the lion's den. And the rule in Persia was that you couldn't repeal a decree. So Darius signs this decree. His top three advisors tell him it's a good idea. Get people accustomed to this concept that you run the show, that they have to ask you for whatever they want. And then the advisors come and tell Darius, you know, we've seen Daniel in his home going up to the attic and praying. He's going against your decree. You have to kill him. That's the rule. You're not allowed to go against the rules of Persia. And Darius says, I don't believe you. So they force him to come out with them. And they show him how Daniel is up in his attic three times a day. He has his window open towards Jerusalem. And he's praying towards Jerusalem. And Darius has no choice. So he puts Daniel in the den. And he tells him, the God that you pray to him so frequently should save you from the lions. He wishes Daniel as he puts him in. And he seals the entrance to the den to ensure that no one else would come in and try to harm him. And all night long he's fretting and worrying and concerned for Daniel's well-being. And the next morning he's so pleased to see the great miracle that Daniel came out of the lion's den alive, unscathed, that the lions couldn't touch him. And then he has the advisors thrown into the den, and before they hit the ground, they're torn to shreds by the lions. So King David, in prophetic vision, saw that this was to happen to his descendant Daniel, and wrote this psalm about that. So that's another level of interpretation. One of the midrashim that Rashi and the other commentaries quote, that this is what David was talking about. So we'll learn the psalm, and we'll go back and forth between the different levels of interpretation. So we're continuing Pasuk Bet. David says, Shema Elohim Koli Vesichi, Hashem, hear my voice as I speak, as I tell over my suffering. Siach literally means conversation. But throughout Tanakh, we find the word siach as a reference to prayer. David HaMelech says, Hashem, listen to me as I pray, as I tell over my troubles. Mipachad oyev titzol chayai. As I fear from the enemy, Hashem, you protect my life. And if this is talking about Daniel, so then the enemy is the advisors who are trying to kill him. If this is talking about David, so this could be the enemies throughout his life. If this is talking about David and King Saul, so then the oyev, the enemy, is King Saul.
What's the connection to Daniel?
Daniel was his descendant, and we have a tradition that David foresaw that Daniel would undergo all of this. We have many places in Tanakh where Chazal say that David was aware of what was yet to happen with Daniel, with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He saw that they would be castrated, that they would be eunuchs. He prayed over them. So the different psalms have different levels of interpretation, but we have different psalms that are attributed to that worry. David HaMelech realizing that his descendants would ultimately face this challenge and praying over that. So this is one of those psalms where Chazal say he was praying over Daniel. Tastireini misod mireim. Tastireini literally means hide me. It means protect me from the secrets of those that want to harm me. Meirikshat poaleyavin. From the unification. They gather together to do sin, to harm me. They're plotting how to destroy me. Meirikshat poaleyavin. From the unification of all these liars. And that's really what happens. Here you have the advisors plotting and uniting in a false plot to tell Darius, anyone who's faithful to you would never ask anyone else for a request, at least for a month. That's not true. Daniel was his most faithful servant, and that didn't contradict with Daniel being religious and praying to God. But they were able to convince Darius to sign that decree. And so David prays, hide me from the secrets of those that want to harm me, from those that unite to do lies, to try and harm me in deceit. Asher shaninu chacherev lishonam, darechu chitzam, davar mar. They sharpen their sword, which is in essence, the tool they're using to kill me is their tongue. And this is a recurring theme throughout Tehillim, where David describes how those who want to kill him use their tongue, their speech, as their swords. And this is something David HaMelech suffered, where people kept telling King Saul, he's plotting against you, he really hates you, and it's not true. People were able to arouse King Saul against David when David did him no harm. So David speaks over here, if we're talking about David's life, he speaks about the people who sharpen their tongue like a sword. They load their bows, the arrows that they use are poisoned. And again, the idea is, when you speak against someone, so someone could be living here and he could hurt someone across the globe because he says a juicy piece of Lashon Hara about them. He says a juicy piece of Lashon Hara over here and he gets hurt around the globe. We had a guy a number of years ago, he was dating a girl here and he happened to fly across the globe to Australia. I mean, mama, she's crossing an international dateline. He's flying across the globe as he was dating her. And there happened to be someone that Pesach visiting from Australia who knew her family and sat there in shul, and the conversation came up. He was listening in and he heard this man speak about his neighbors, which were this family from Australia, not from Australia, from the United States. He's dating a girl here in Israel. We'll say the girl's from California, wherever she was from. And their neighbor from California, I'm making up California, it was a different state, comes into Australia. The guy from here goes to Australia for Pesach. He's sitting in shul. And here's the guy next to him talking about his neighbors who could never calm down. They're on the verge of divorce. The kids are suffering so terribly in the house. What a terrible house to grow up in. No one could manage in such a house. No kid could come out normal. And he's hearing all this. And he's just sitting there listening to the conversation. And in the end, he hears they're talking about none other than the family of the girl he's dating. What are the chances, right? When he came back here, that taught me about Lashon Hara. When I heard that story, I said to me, wow, Chazal said you could sit here and kill someone across the globe by talking Lashon Hara. He comes back and says, how could I continue if I know this is the house she grew up in? And Bekitzer, he broke off with her. I say, you know, judge the facts, judge what's before you. But he was finished after everything he heard there. He said, no way. All right, so he came back right. He came back with that one too. Ashkacha Pratis, God wanted me to hear this. What were the odds of it happening this way?
Look at Rivka. That's a lesson,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying, I didn't tell him to break up.
I'm not sure what I'm doing.
What happened to Rivka?
But Tifta taught me about Lashon Hara. That was one of the times I learned what Lashon Hara can do. You think, what are the odds? You know, like Tom Clancy said, the difference between fiction and non-fiction is that fiction has to make sense. When it's non-fiction, so David HaMelech describes that they poison their bows, and that's the idea that Lashon Hara, you could be sitting here and hurting someone across the globe by saying something. So that's why it's compared to an arrow that's shot from afar. When you shoot an arrow, so you endanger yourself less. You could shoot the enemy from afar. So that's what David HaMelech is saying. They sharpen their tongues like swords. They poison their arrows as they shoot against me. Their intent is to shoot in hiding people who have really done nothing wrong, people who are tam, who are whole, they've done nothing wrong. Pitom yoruhu velo yirau. And suddenly they turn on them and they shoot them and they're not scared. They have no fear of heaven. And that's again a recurring theme by David HaMelech, that people are willing to be evil to other people because they're not God-fearing. And that's the true test. When a person realizes that God's looking over his shoulders, then that his behavior should be reflective of that. Yechazeku lamo davar ra. Yisaperu litmon mokeshim ameru mi yire lamo. Yechazeku lamo. They. Lamo is like lahim. They strengthen davar ra. The bad things that they say. Yesaperu litmon mokshim. They tell things over, and their thoughts are really to plant stumbling blocks. Meaning, it's like they're planting mines, and that's the way people are. People will sometimes say a line about someone, and they don't see directly at that moment how they're harming them, but they're planting a mine. Every time we say something negative about someone, that's the idea of Lashon Hara. Technically, there's a prohibition to harm someone else. What's the prohibition of Lashon Hara? The prohibition of Lashon Hara is that I'm saying something which right now I don't see the harm in it. But in the long run, it'll catch up with him. You sit at a table and they say, oh, so-and-so is such a nice guy. And you say, yeah, he's very nice. I just wouldn't trust him with my money, but he's really nice. Now, no one here is planning on doing any business deals with him right now. But what's going to happen in a week, in a month, when he suddenly needs a loan? So then that Lashon Hara comes back to haunt the person. He doesn't even know it. But suddenly the guy is thinking, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. And there are all kinds of lines which we throw out inadvertently, and that's why Lashon Hara over here is described as a mine. You're sending out a stumbling block. Right now no one's falling on it. But in the long run, that's what Lashon Hara does. It comes back to haunt the person.
It actually protects you from losing your money now because you heard this. Like, you wouldn't have dealt well with your money, you would have lost it. Well, let's say this woman that guy would have married, she would have made him miserable. So
maybe, but you have to really know that.
You can't just throw that out. We ask about the Bible or somebody about that, right? I mean, you can't just throw that out in general conversation.
It means every person that adopted couldn't have got married and all that.
Saying it's that's the whole concept of Lashon Hara. If I know a situation where it's detrimental to a person to know the information, even then I have to think 1,000 times how to present it to make sure that what I say is accurate, that I don't exaggerate. So this again reflects very directly on what they did to Daniel. They come to the king, they give him a piece of advice, and they're setting up a stumbling block, and they figure, who's going to see? Well, God's watching, and that's why ultimately they paid for it with their lives. The advisors themselves were thrown into the lion's den. Yechapesu olot, tamnu chefes mechupas. Yechapesu olot, they are searching for plots, for reasons to attack. But how do they translate the word olot? Pasuk zayin. No, so olot is more like ilah. They're searching for where when you have reason to attack. What's that called?
So you're saying as when Intifada began, that they were waiting, that the Arabs in Gaza were just waiting for some sort of trigger.
Right.
Someone gets. Little Arab boy gets hit by a car, boom.
Right.
The inward front part of each is deeply hidden.
So they're trying, that's the continuation of the pasuk. They're trying to set up a trigger. Right? It's to set up a trigger. You're trying to create a trigger. Yechapesu olot. Tamenu chefes mechupas. And when they finished searching things out and they found the plot, so then each one came and they got dressed up. They made believe we're coming to give the king the greatest advice. And these are the advisors of Darius, of Daryavesh, who told him to write up that decree that would ultimately cause Daniel to be killed. So that's one interpretation. The other interpretation is it's about David, where they look at everything he did and try to interpret it in a way that would be harmful, in a way that they could tell King Saul, you see what he's doing? And if you think about it, many people are that way. I've seen many times where mothers-in-law will call and speak about a daughter-in-law and they say, what's her name? The name just eludes them. You know, how's what's her name? Ah, right, right. Yeah. Sandra, yes. People have thoughts inside and they know how to express it in ways that they're really covering up what their deeper thoughts are. And the truth is, v'kerevish v'lev amok, they keep it deep down inside what they're plotting and thinking. But it's like the guy whose wife works at a daycare center and his parents keep calling and asking, did your wife find a real job? Why is that not a real job? And you could say that about anything and get a person to view the other one badly. Now, all you did was ask an innocent question, right? Did she find a real job? Did she find a job that will really cover the bills? Yes, Uri.
Okay, so like the whole thing is like, yeah, I mean, can't go around speaking Lashon Hara about somebody. Like, what if, like, you have somebody, like, you just don't get along with him, you don't like him. How are you supposed to deal with these negative feelings?
You say it to him.
I mean, obviously, you're not supposed to, like, go around speaking bad about him, because in the world of the goy, that's how you get out of your bad feelings. It's like, you go on, like, a rant for 2 minutes, and then, like, oh, okay, you forget about it, but obviously, you're not going to do that according to Halacha. So what does Judaism prescribe? Because I really don't believe in just going and making nice with the guy, like, oh yeah, here, let me give you a piece of my rugach and let's be brothers. I mean, this guy, you don't like him, and yeah, he's your, like, your fellow Jewish. But like, what are you supposed to do with those feelings?
My emotion. You should, like, every Jew.
There's answers like that. There's the practical answer. There's like, the real answer, I could tell you, there's no such thing as good and evil. The ultimate thing is like never to view good or evil. There's no such thing. It's all Hashem. But, you know, from our perspective, it doesn't work.
Somebody doesn't want to argue that you just don't like. How do you do it? It's a good question.
You do like Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu never spoke bad about Israel.
The best, but not everybody has that.
He never spoke bad about Israel when he was around people or Hashem or somebody who wasn't Israel. But he had something to say to Israel. He said it to Israel. You say it face to face. You don't see it, say it to somebody else, so it comes back to him in a different way.
So you're saying, like, if you have a problem with guys, talk to him about it?
Yeah.
It's
hard, but that's the idea.
What if the guy responds to say, well, you can take your problems that you
then it's his problem. It's his problem, but you did the right thing.
Well, you did the right thing. The negative feelings are still there.
So yeah, but maybe if you talk with him, he will think about it. That's also a way to say it, you know.
But I can cover that ground with the game. Like, when you go up to somebody you don't like, and they don't like you, and they don't like you, and it's not even that they're a bad person, it's that you have different personalities. Talking with the guy, going on like a big long walk with him in the park isn't necessarily
if there's no one who's being harmed, just don't, you know, try not to have a real relationship or be in as much contact. Be like, okay, you know, you have to be cordial and do what you would expect him to do to you, but don't do more than that if there's no harm. If there's something that's being harmed, you're being harmed, or someone else is, or he is,
then you work that out so that no one's being harmed. But if it's just like, no, I don't really like, I don't have a particular interest in being friends with someone. So instead of saying, I don't like them, or letting that escalate, just don't have anything to do with it. So, problem solved.
Yes. There was a word I
think I like that answer.
There was a word I didn't
I
like.
I think I like that answer.
Okay.
There was a word I didn't like in my former job. And he really annoyed me, and I told him, you know, why are you only taking the small packages? The small packages are for girls. No, it was the job for the girls in the shop. We are supposed to take the bigger packages. He said, I can do whatever you want. Then I exploded on him. And
it solved everything.
It solved everything because he was talking bad about everybody and also the Manel. And then the Manel had a reason to get rid of him. So
finally had someone with enough love of Augustville to hire him. What did you do?
He wasn't Jewish.
Okay, pasuk chet. Vayore im Elohim chetz pitom hayu makotam. Vayore im Elohim. So Hashem ultimately shot them down. Hashem sent his arrow suddenly against them, and that's the midah keneged midah. They were prepared to shoot someone down unexpectedly, and Hashem shot them down unexpectedly. Here, the advisors of Darius were confident that they've wiped Daniel out. That's it. He's thrown into the lion's den. And the exact opposite happens. The next morning, he walks out unscathed, and they get thrown in, and their lives are over. Their own tongues did them in. Vayachshilu, they were stumbled, aleimo, themselves, lishonam, by their own tongues, yitnodidu kol roivam, and whoever saw them would shake their heads and laugh. Look at that. They thought they'd finished Daniel. Look at what really happened. Vayireu kol adam, and everyone became more God-fearing. Vayagidu po'al Elohim umaseu hiskilu, people would tell over. And everyone knows, to some degree, the story of Daniel and the lions then. Everyone's telling over, look at what God did. Daniel walked away unscathed, and the people who tried to kill him, they're the ones that got done in. So that's the end of the story. Yismach tzadik badonai v'chasavo. The righteous can be happy in the salvation of Hashem. And so people are encouraged to take coverage in Hashem even more. V'italelu kol yishrei lev, and all the people who are honest can now take pride, because look at what happened here. You see, they tried to do Daniel in, and look what happened to them. So when you have these occurrences in history, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes you feel like, hey, the tzaddik, look at what he got. They did do him in. But when you have these exceptions like Daniel and the lions then, so then people can take pride and say, wow, look at that. What we see in this chapter? David HaMelech sings about the enemies that talk behind his back. They use their tongues to try and shoot him down without warning. And they're planting mines along the way to knock him down. On the outside, they show as though everything's fine, but deep down inside, they're plotting for him consistently. And Hashem will turn the tables on them, shoot them suddenly down, and when their tongue does them in, so then everyone looks at that and says, wow, it pays to be a God-fearing person. Look at what happened. And then the people who were honest all along will be able to take pride in the outcome of the story where those advisors were the ones that were done in. So that's in a nutshell, that's this chapter, Perek Samach Dalet.